Hey, everyone. Thanks for downloading the show. This is Garden Fork Radio. This is me, Eric. I have a YouTube channel and this audio podcast. It's a eclectic DIY. Thanks for coming along. Today, my friend Will from the Weekend Homestead YouTube channel is here. Hey, sir.
How are you doing today?
I have no complaints. I really love doing the podcast early, by the way. It's 8:30 East Coast time, so it's 7:30 your time, right?
Yeah, no, this is great because the wife takes the kids to school and it's nice and quiet in the house here, and it's a good morning.
I find I am my most creative and get most work done better earlier in the day rather than later in the day. So,
actually, I've been trying to get up 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning because for whatever reason, that extra hour before everybody kind of gets going seems to be the most productive. That little space in the morning. I don't know why, but it just is.
It's also a really good time to meditate. If you all want to meditate, just check out the Headspace app. It's very cool. It has really helped tame the hamster wheel in my brain. So, subtle hint there, everybody. There's silence there.
I was meditating, sorry.
So today we're going to go a deep dive into do-it-yourself solar. And I have some thoughts about that, and Will has actually done it. And then we're going to talk about, get an outhouse update. And my guilt-ridden podcast a while ago worked very well. We have 5 new iTunes reviews, and we're going to read all of them.
Awesome.
Yay. So you long story short, you have a property in Wisconsin, and you have a couple different buildings. One of them is a fairly new pole barn, and you are wiring it to run the whole thing on solar. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. So the property is broken up into 2 parts. I'll give the very, very short story for the folks who haven't heard this before. But the property is very long and narrow. And in the process of buying it, we bought a couple different pieces. Well, one of the pieces is on the grid, and it's the house and the cabin that everybody's seen us remodel. The other part of the property is an off-grid cabin that has a pole barn, and we have the apple orchard and everything. But it's way back in the woods, and the power company wanted an exorbitant amount of money to run electrical out there. But I need power in the barn, so I kept researching and trying to figure out, and kind of we decided, hey, let's do solar and give it a try. So we over Memorial Day weekend, we installed solar into the barn, and I've got now I have lights in the pole barn, which is pretty neat.
So could you walk us through how you figured out how big of a panel or panels you needed and what kind of gear?
Can I get on my soapbox for a minute about solar for a second before we get into this as a disclaimer?
Sure. Yeah.
It's amazing to me how complicated solar is if you read about it on the internet, if you go online and you watch videos, people have all this math and all these equations and this does this and the output here and it has this type of curve on the electrical and all these different things and this is your wattage and make sure you calculate your amperage and then figure in your amp hours, but then you have to figure out what type of batteries and like all these things, and it gets really complicated and very overwhelming very, very quickly. And quite honestly, I kind of looked at it as, let's start with something really simple.
Yeah.
Let's figure out what we want to run and then figure out how to do that. Because if you go online and you look this stuff up, wow, there's a lot of experts out there and there's a lot of opinions. Just like beekeeping, I've learned that solar has a lot of applications. And the reason why is very, very simple. And this is what I've discovered. No 2 solar applications are the exact same. So what I'm going to describe today may work for you, but may not work for you. And more likely, it won't work for you, but with slight modifications, it will work for you. And that's why there's so many opinions, because everybody's solar panel systems and needs are different. Somebody in California who's powering their house has one need. Somebody in Denver who has a house in the mountains is another need. Somebody in California or in Canada will have one. Everybody is different. So the system we're going to talk about today is a system to put together on a budget to run some very, very simple things.
I love that. It's all about simple. That's Garden Fork.
Well, so I've wanted to do this for 2 years, and I got stuck in the minutiae of reading online and, oh, make sure you figure out this calculation and here's your line loss and all these other things. And I'm just like, oh, this is so overwhelming. And then one day I kind of decided, you know what? I'm just going to buy a panel. I'm just going to buy some batteries. I'm going to put this together and see if it'll work. So that's basically what we did. And once I finally broke down and got into it, I learned how simple solar actually is, and it's not as complicated as a lot of the experts make it. There's a lot of money to be made in the solar business for you buying the, I don't want to say the wrong amount of equipment, but maybe overbuying your equipment or getting consulting services. And it's a big business out there. And that's, I think, so the solar panel system that I designed, the simple part of it is we wanted to run 8 lights on the ceiling, and I wanted to have 1 or 2 outlets over by the workbench. And the goal is inside the pole barn, they're great, but unfortunately at night, like I think it was like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, all of a sudden it gets dark in there where you have to start using flashlights. And if you know Wisconsin, in the winter time, it starts getting dark at 4:30. Well, if you want to go do something in there, you're doing everything by flashlights and so on. So I'm like, we've got to find a simple way to put some lights in here and an outlet so you can charge your cell phone or you can recharge DeWalt batteries or do those types of things. Things I'm not doing, I'm not running a coffee pot. I'm not running an electric stove or an air conditioner or a refrigerator. Those things use a lot of power.
Yep.
I'm running very, very light load stuff. So that's why I can afford to get a light load system. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about adding up everything. There's a very simple equation that you need to know, which is watts equals amps times volts. Very simple math equation. With that equation, you can figure out whatever type of solar panel system you need. And it comes down to 2 things. How much energy are you using? Actually, I'll say it this way. It takes 3 things. How much energy are you using? How much energy are you storing? And how much energy are you making? That's really it. You can put any equation together for any system, and they'll all end up in the same place. If you have a dishwasher, 6 lights, a monitor, a refrigerator, all those things, all of those used power. And if you divide it down to how much power you use every day by the hour, that will tell you what your usage is. So give you an example, an LED light bulb uses 8 watts of power. Actually, light bulbs are a really good example of how to calculate out solar panel systems. Give you an example, if you have 8 100 watt light bulbs, you're using 800 watts an hour with those light bulbs. If you switch those light bulbs to LED light bulbs, and they're 100 watt equivalent light bulbs that are producing, let's say 9 watts of power, now you have 72. So you've just taken 800 and lowered it to 72, getting the same result using less power. So for a solar panel system, LED light bulbs are kind of, I don't want to say the savior of it, but if you have, you know, 20 light bulbs or 30 light bulbs in your house, because just look around the room you're in right now and count up how many lights are you see between the lamps and the outlets and everything like that. And if every one of those have 60 or 100 watt light bulbs, you're using a lot of power. Switching those light bulbs out make you use less power, which means you need less batteries and less panels in order to power this all up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the simple piece is we have 8 light bulbs up on the ceiling. I put 100 watt light bulbs in there. So those use up X amount of power. I think they're 10 watt light bulbs, and we have 8 of them up there. So I'm using 80 watts for that. And then I figured out if I use my DeWalt battery charger, because that's probably the biggest power hog that we have, I think that uses, I want to say, 100 watts in a day or something like that. So we're using 180 watts of energy per hour of usage. Well, I figured out over a 3-day period, if I used it all the time, how much power would I use? I add that number up. Now, let's go to the other side of the equation, which is there's 2 types of voltages in the world. I mean, there's more than that, but really there's 2. There's 12 volt and there's 110 volt. 110 volt is like what you plug in your wall, and 12 volt is what you plug into your cigarette lighter in your car. They have cigarette lighters in cars, right?
Yeah. Power adapter, it's called now.
Power adapter. So that's the other part of the equation. If you can do some simple math back and forth, you can figure out how much power you're using. And that's what comes down to what's called amp hours. Amp hours is basically the equation, the separate part of the equation, which is voltage, 110 volts, times a certain number of amps equals watts. Well, if you divide it backwards, we figured out that we were using, I think it was 35 amp hours a day, which isn't much. That's not very much power. So now I know how much I'm using. So what do I want to do? Well, I need to either produce that amount of power per day, or I need to store that amount of power. Because in a snowy day, you're not going to produce much power. Right. Versus a sunny day, we're going to produce tons of power. So for us, it was, I got a battery that was twice as big as what I need. So we actually got 120 amp hour battery, which means I can store 3 days worth of power, give or take, in that. And then I got a battery array that produces 8 amps of power, or a solar panel array that produces 8 amp hours of power. Well, in a day, I produce about 40 amps of power. So what I'm using is what I'm producing, and I'm storing 3 days worth of power. So the likelihood of me using it all up is pretty slim. And that's it. That's really what it comes down to. How much power am I producing? How much power am I using? And how much power am I storing? That's all a solar panel system is.
And I'm going to wing this based on my experience, but there's basically 4 components. There's your solar panel. There's what's called the charge controller, which goes from the solar panel connects to the charge controller. The charge controller connects to the battery or batteries, and then your inverter, which changes the battery voltage to 120 volts.
Correct. Yep. That's really what it comes down to. And if you wanted to, instead of putting the inverter in there, if you had 12, let's say you had a really off-grid system or a really, really small system, you could use 12-volt lights, you could use 12-volt fans, you could use 12-volt chargers, those types of things. Then you wouldn't need an inverter at all, because if you bought a 12-volt battery, and by the way, for all the engineers who are screaming at the radio right now, yes, there's 12-volt, and there's 24-volt, and there's 48-volt, and there's all sorts of other things. I'm trying to keep it to the simplest thing, because that's what a lot of people – like, I've had a couple of people email me and say, wow, the system that you're putting together, give me the components, give me the information. It solves the simple problem I need, which is, you know, power over here. I know that there's hundreds of different iterations of this and powers and voltages. We're keeping it to the simple.
Yeah, because I have 2 friends who have cabins off the grid, and I actually helped. We have a video tour of the one cabin's solar setup, which is very similar, except they're not even using an inverter. You know, all these RVs use our 12-volt system. They have an inverter on board as well, but all the lights and stuff in an RV are 12-volt, and they do make 12-volt compact fluorescents, but now they make 12-volt LED lights with what's called an Edison base, which is that screw kind of base that goes into a regular lamp. So you could have a cabin with nice decorative lamps and screw in a 12-volt LED bulb and just wire that to your to your 12-volt battery, and you're good to go. So the inverter that pumps it up to 120 volt isn't a necessity unless you really want that. But if you want to keep it even simpler, like my 2 friends have, you know, all these things, you could even get a little inverter that plugs into your power adapter in your car if you ever have to bump it up to run your blow dryer or something for 5 minutes. So it's just brilliantly simple. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, for us, let's break down the components for a second. So on the roof of the barn, I have 100-watt solar panel. It produces about 8 amps of power. So it's producing 8 units of power per hour that it gets sunlight. And for our area, we get about five hours of sunlight. Now, granted, it's sunny outside more often throughout the day, but you kind of have to have direct sunlight. So they kind of do an average. National Weather Service did a great job of this. They have a spot where you punch in your address and it'll tell you how much solar, how much wind, how much everything that you use on average so that you can calculate this out. So like if you're in Texas, your number for an average is, I think, is like 10 or something like that, versus us, because of wintertime and the way the sun tilts and everything like that, we only get about 4.5 to 5 hours. If you're up in Canada, you might only get 3. So that's why every solar panel system is different, because depending on where you're physically sitting, you can take my system and put it here in Wisconsin and it'll produce one thing. You can take it to Texas and it'll produce something completely different. So that's, I think, one of the things that you have to look at when we first start talking about this, is where your location is. But the panel is a 100-watt panel. It sits on the roof and it produces 8 units or 8 amp hours of power. I have a very simple one battery, 12 volt battery. It's called a deep cycle battery, which means that you can run it down and bring it back up and run it down. You don't want to bring it below 50%, but you know, you can charge it and recharge it, charge it and recharge it over and over again. And that will hold 125 amp hours of power, which means that I can go for, if I'm not using the system and let's say the battery was at 50%, I could go for a number of days with my solar panel, and it will recharge that battery no problem in a day's time period based on the amount of usage that I have. And if I don't have any power, that then the battery will last a pretty long period of time before I actually run out. The next component, like you said, is a charge controller, which charge controller is really just a gateway that kind of, I'm going to really simplify this down, but it makes sure that you don't overcharge your batteries. It's basically kind of a governor to your batteries.
Yep. They're all at $50.
Yeah. Well, you can get more expensive ones. It'll tell you all sorts of statistics and stuff like that. But I'll be honest with you. I just wanted to know if it was charged or not. It has three simple lights. Is it on? Is it charging? And is it charged? That's it.
Yes, no, and maybe.
Literally, it's that simple. But the simple piece is it looks at your battery and goes, oh, because solar doesn't know any better. Solar panels just produce, they're like, hey, I have light, I'm making power. I have light, I'm making power. And it just keeps shoving it down there. And what people figured out was it was cooking the batteries because it would overcharge the batteries, because you shouldn't really ever overcharge your battery.
Right.
So what they came up with is a technology charge controller, which controls that, or at least to make sure that you don't overcharge. So very simple charge controller. Cool thing is, I bought it on Amazon, the solar panel, and it came with the charge controller that was the right size for it, and it came with all the wiring.
Yes.
So literally it was, you open the box and it was plug and play.
And the solar panels come with these very unique plugs on them, right? At least my panel has these kind of black plasticky plugs, like a male and female plug, which look nothing like regular extension cords.
Well, even better than that is they only hook up one way, so you can't mess it up. There's no way. I mean, that's the best part about it is the red one connects to the red one, the black one connects to the black one, and they only go one way. So there's no way to mess that up. In the charge controller, it has three simple icons. It has a spot where it looks like a panel, and you just screw the two wires in where the panel goes. There's a spot where the battery is, where you screw the two wires in for the battery. And then for the inverter, there's a spot where you screw in for those. And literally, you just hook up the wires to it, and that's it. And some of them, you don't even have the inverter wires. It's just the battery and the solar panel. Yeah. The battery itself, 120 amp hour battery, you can get all different sizes. I've seen them as small as 35 on Amazon, all the way up to, I think, 300. Now, the bigger you get, of course, the more expensive they are. But
and they are heavy.
Yes. Holy cow. I watched the guy from UPS deliver this thing, and like the box is, it's small. I mean, it's, you know, maybe a foot by 6 inches by 8 inches tall. And he's carrying it like it weighs like 500 pounds. And I thought, what is he doing? And he brought it over and he set it down and I picked it up. I'm like, holy cow, this thing is ridiculous. One last piece, the inverter.
Yes.
Very, very simple. You can get all different types. There's ones for your car, there's ones for your home, and then there's these fancy ones called sine wave inverters or pure sine wave inverters. All it basically is car ones don't have a ground. The inverters, like the one that I got, is just a standard inverter that, you know, produces light and you can charge things and stuff like that. A sine wave inverter is for very high-tech stuff, like if you have electronics in your house, like a computer that you want to power or some delicate electronic things, you want something. Because a sine wave inverter will always produce the same result versus the type of inverter I got, where if I plug in a table saw, the lights dim, you know, versus a pure sine wave where it would always keep that output the same no matter what the load is.
Right. And then there's, to get really geeky, you're losing power at every step of the way here. So when you run, you've got your 12 volts coming out of your battery. When you run it through the inverter takes some of that energy, uses some of that energy to convert to 120 volts. So if you've got 100 amps, 100 watts coming in, you might get 80 watts coming out.
Yep. It takes it'll use up some of your power. And I like to convert everything to amp hours. I know everybody talks watts, like how many watts is your light bulb or how many watts is your... Right. battery or your panel or all these different things. I actually look at amp hours, and I think about it as units of energy. So each one of my light bulbs uses one unit of energy per hour. My DeWalt thing uses 3 units of energy. So you add those up, and let's say I have 20 units of energy that I use every hour. And then if I have a battery, how many units of energy can I store in that battery? Oh, okay, I can store 120. So I have 6 hours of usage. If everything was on running full bore all the time, you know, I have 6 hours of usage in that battery. And then how much usage is my panel, you know, pushing back into the system? Oh, 8 hours. Okay, so now I look at it, and you know, after 2 hours of running my solar panel, I've used basically an hour worth of power, if that makes sense. If you just break it down to simple numbers, it becomes really simple.
Hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast app, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right? Thank you. So I'm going to throw you a left curve here because I watched your video about wiring the barn. And my thought was after while you were doing what I... If I were to do it myself, and I am going to, I would take across the roof rafters, you had all your lights.
Yep.
I would wire those as 12-volt LEDs, and then to your workshop bench, I would run the 120-volt and have regular outlets there.
I had thought of that, and quite honestly, if I didn't know that they had the 12-volt Edison screw-in bulbs. Every time I looked for lights, they were, I hate to say it, RV lights. You know, they looked like RV lights. And I got one of them and plugged it in, and it didn't do very well. So I'm like, I'm not going to put 12 RV lights across the ceiling of my pole barn. I need something that has, you know, some serious light power, because you want to have that space lit if you're going to be working in it, you know.
Right.
And so the reason why I went the way I did was, one, I had a bunch of wire left over from the remodel, so I kind of burned up a bunch of extra Romex wire that I had laying around. But two, I didn't know those lights existed, so I guess I have to look into the Edison screw-in 12-volt lights.
Yeah, they're not, you have to type in 12-volt Edison base LED bulb into the search engine to find them, but they're not ubiquitous. There's some specialty sites that sell them. And, a little side juncture, they're actually starting to measure light bulbs in lumens rather than watts now, because LEDs pull a different amount of watts than CFLs and regular incandescent bulbs. So, but they all can be measured in how much light output they have rather than how much power they use. So lumens is a big word now.
Well, to talk about one other quick item. So we also have a little off-grid cabin that's near where the pole barn is. And I had oversized the system in the barn, just thinking, okay, I want to have a couple days worth of power there and usage and everything. And then I actually plugged in the meters to read how much I was using. And I was actually using a lot less. Like, I've never had a shot where I've used more than 5% of my battery in a day. And we've been using it since Memorial Day weekend, and we haven't used it yet. So we went over to the off-grid cabin, and I've always run it on a generator. And there's this really cool device that you can buy, and maybe I can have you put it in the Amazon store, but it's called a kilowatt. And basically you plug it into the wall, and then you plug something into it, and it'll tell you how much power it's using.
Yeah, it's an LED meter, LCD meter, yeah.
Yep. And so I have one of these, and we took the power cable, because the way the person who originally designed the cabin was, there's literally an extension cord just coming out of the side of the building that you plug into the generator, and that's what powers up the house. Probably not to code, but that's kind of just how it is right now.
Yep, that's cabins.
Yep. And so I put the kilowatt on the end of that, and I plugged it into the generator, and I turned it on. And I went into the cabin and I turned on every single light switch and everything that's in there. I turned everything on just to see what the whole building is using. And it's all said and done. The ceiling fan's running, the lights on, everything like that. 555 watts of power. Now, wow. here's where LED light bulbs come into play. This is what blew my mind. So we went through the cabin and we replaced all of the light bulbs because they were all the original 60-watt and 100-watt light bulbs and things like that, and all of the fixtures in the ceilings and all that. We replaced all of them. Now the cabin runs on 115 watts of power just by changing out those light bulbs.
Wow.
Which blew my mind. Well, for us, where the benefit comes in is I'm thinking about trenching a wire from the pole barn over, because if I'm using 110 watts, I've oversized my system in the barn so that I could add on to it at some point in time. I could easily support powering that building, and now we don't have to run the generator to run that building, and I'm running a cabin and the pole barn off of that one solar panel system that I put together.
Cool. There is going to be a calculation you have to make for the gauge of the wire going from the barn to the cabin, you know, and that requires some math, so...
Yep, I'm actually there isn't. It requires Google. You just go to Google and you type in, I need to run wires so far, and they have a calculator that you punch in how far and how many amps or how many units you're driving across that, and it'll tell you exactly the size wire you need.
People might be banging their head against the dashboard right now because we're geeking out so much here on solar, but I'm going to warn everyone in the title of the show. But would you run 12 volt from the barn to the cabin and another inverter, or would you run 120 volt from the inverter that's in the garage?
Okay, so here we go. Get the white coats on and the marker boards. here comes the geekdom. I'm actually going to run 110, and the reason why is because over that distance, having more voltage getting pushed that distance will actually lower. So when you run wire, just so people know, just like your garden hose, if you hook up a really short garden hose to your house and you run it, you'll get a lot of power and a lot of throughput off the end of the hose. If you put a 500-foot hose on your house and you hook up the hose to the end, the hose usage at the end is going to be diminished. Well, when you run wire, think of it the same way. Electricity runs just like wire or water does. So running that distance, there's going to be some resistance. At 110 volts, I think that the voltage drop is more manageable than at 12 volts, if that makes sense.
Yes, it totally does. All right.
There you go.
It can be really simple. And the video, the Garden Fork video that I'll link to in the show here, or just go to our YouTube channel and type in solar panel. It's literally a solar panel that is the size of my IMAX screen on a piece of plumbing pipe stuck in the yard that we tilted. You can determine the ideal sun angle. There's a bunch of sites that'll tell you the ideal angle for your panel, where you live and where to tilt it, you know, what part of the sky to point it to. And then we took a heavy-duty outdoor extension cord and trenched it in the ground. Literally, I took a flat hoe, and cut a slit in the grass, and we shoved this extension cord about 3 inches under the grass, and we ran... it's about 30 feet from the solar panel into the basement of the cabin. That's 12 volt, low voltage. You're not going to shock anyone. And then in there is the controller and there are two deep discharge batteries there. And then the house is run on 12 volt and that's it.
I think the thing that really messes with people when they look at solar is there's really a couple key components that kill solar. Microwaves, coffee pots, refrigerators, and air conditioners. Yep. You know, anything that has the big plug, take it out of your equation for solar. And the only reason why I say this, you can do it, but that's when the prices skyrocket. When you see these guys come out and they're like, oh, it's $10,000 or $15,000 for a solar panel array to power your house. Well, yeah, but you're running an AC unit half the day and things like that. If you ever get a little kilowatt meter and you plug your AC unit into it and plug it into a wall and then plug in your monitor into the kilowatt meter and you can see on the little screen, it'll tell you how much power is being used over a period of time. And it's amazing to figure out what in your house is actually pulling power and what is not. So it's and how much it's using. It's just shocking to use an electrical, but it's shocking to see how much power you actually use even on a coffee pot.
Yeah. And my friends in the cabins have propane-powered refrigerators. and propane stoves. So, and you can get, you can buy brand new propane refrigerators from, I think it's called Layman's. They are kind of a Mennonite Amish supplier, but they also supply off-grid people as well. Propane refrigerators are pretty cool. They work on the same principle. I mean, the flame drives a compressor, basically.
Yep.
I'm kind of glossing over that whole process, but it's kind of funny because every year to the Freon, the refrigerant in the propane refrigerator needs to be reset. So we turn the solar we turn the propane refrigerator upside down for a day. I don't know what it does, but then you have to put it back up again and it all works very well again.
I will say I have looked at those propane refrigerators, and the only commentary I have with them is because they don't sell very many of them, they're fairly expensive. And the other item is you're trading one thing for another, because I believe a propane refrigerator, if you have a full-size one or a mid-size one, they use about a gallon of propane a day. So and we're talking the big ones. If you get like a bar style or a camper style fridge, it's probably about half that. But still, you're using one energy source for another. So that is one thing you have to look at too.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it is what it is. And if you really live in the outback, you can go to a Tractor Supply and they sell, are they called 100 pounders or 100 gallon, the taller propane tanks? But you can put those in the back of your truck or car and take them down to the gas station and they'll fill them up, you know, with propane for you. And if you don't have curbside delivery, you know, of the, in our town, there's a guy who has a big truck. He's my neighbor, Paul. And we have two of those, I think they're called 100 pounders or 100 gallon, I can't remember, in the back of the house. And he just switches them out, or he fills up your tank if you have like an in-ground tank or something like that. If you are going to get propane, buy the tank. Don't rent it from the company, because if you want to switch companies, it becomes a big deal. If you buy your tanks outright, I think that's a much better way to go.
Yeah, definitely. I will say, going back to the solar piece for one second, when I first got into this, I was like, why doesn't somebody just sell a kit? Where's the kit, you know, that you can just buy with all the pieces together? And it just doesn't exist because everybody's usage is different. The goal of what I put together, and I'll send you the notes so you can put them in the show notes of the exact pieces that we bought, was a very, very simple system that solves a very simple problem for cheap. I mean, I think $600 to get electricity in the barn, considering that the power company wanted $17,000 to bring the electrical up the road for us. I feel like $600 is a pretty good deal to solve our problem.
Yeah. All right. So if you have any questions about this, it's radio@gardenfork.tv, and Will and I will do a follow-up and answer questions. That's radio@gardenfork.tv. So that's like a half hour's worth of show here.
Wow.
People with their deep dive. And we have, I forgot to turn the phone off.
So.
All right. Would you like to read our reviews, or should we save that for next time?
Let's do the reviews. We'll skip the outhouse.
Okay. Five iTunes reviews. Bear in mind my ability to read. The first one, these are all 5-star ratings, by the way. Love this podcast by, I think, Sandman1903. It's trial and error, but as long as it gets done, you're fine. Eric takes you through his trials of many, many projects that he has just as many problems as you will. As Garden Fork Proverb says, when all else fails, read instructions. Yeah. And then from J.S. Van Allen, great podcast, 5 stars. Quality podcast with interesting topics discussed, including gardening, cooking, technology, DIY, work, life, anything, etc. I love the personal touch, as they're not just talking at you. It's a conversation between Eric and his friends, and you're along for the ride. If you're a fan of the Garden Fork videos on YouTube, this is a great way to see another side of Eric. The way he articulates his thoughts give you a sense of just how intelligent and insightful he is. Well, that's very nice, but completely untrue.
I'm like, wow, you're paying people for the reviews now. Nice, very nice.
Yeah. From Texas TJS, a fun, friendly chat, 5 stars. Like sitting at the table and listening to a good friend or friends chat and provide helpful information. Thanks, Eric. And then 5 stars from DIY Dan, weekly dose of DIY. Thank you, Eric, for putting on the podcast. It's my weekly dose of DIY. The wide range of topics and down-to-earth attitudes makes this a super fun program to listen to. I look forward to the show every week, as well as the YouTube videos. Thanks. Wow. And then the last one, Something for Everyone by S.J. Walton. I've been listening to Garden Fork for years. Eric's down-to-earth and down-in-the-earth when he's gardening. Topics and advice are always worth a listen, whether he's talking about home repair, DIY maker projects, who doesn't like a brick pizza oven, cooking, gardening, beekeeping, maple syrup, and the occasional technology geek out. His regular co-host Rick is also a wealth of information. Just ask him about tomatoes and grow lights. But wait, there's more. Eric also has guest co-hosts who share their expertise on a variety of topics. You never know who is going to show up in the podcast, but you'll never be disappointed. And if you don't learn something, you probably weren't paying attention. Wow.
How about that? That was awesome.
So I will guilt rid you guys again in a future podcast, but that was really cool. So, all right. So you guys are probably at your destination or you've nodded out with us talking about this, but this has been a deep dive on DIY solar. So nice. And now it's only 9 o'clock in the morning and I got the rest of the day here.
Yeah, that's the greatest part about it, you know? So it's been nice.
Whoa. What was that?
I have no idea.
All right. So find Will at the Weekend Homestead. Just type in the Weekend Homestead on YouTube. I'll link to the solar show he did. And you have to do some follow-up videos about the solar install, I imagine, yeah?
Yeah, so the video that posted on Monday was us doing the wiring in the barn. The video that posts tomorrow will be the actual install of the solar. And then I have kind of a third video that's gonna come out, which is kind of cleaning up all the little things that I missed in the first two. One is how to wire it, second one is how to install it, and then the third one is the little tweaks that we did. We put some safety stuff in, like switches and fuses and things like that, so.
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about the safety side. Who knows?
Yeah, safety's no accident.
All right, everyone, thank you for listening. And as always, it's radio@gardenfork.tv. Thanks. Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com. And our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.